This is a special edition of KVMR's Morning News. I'm Mike Thornton. On the news program this morning, we look at the guiding philosophy behind the Bush administration's military and foreign policy. Jim Loeb, a journalist with Interpress, also acts as a political analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus. Mr. Loeb, let me ask you, you said that President Bush's speech, which took place last week at the American Enterprise Institute, is significant because it took place there. Why are you saying that?
The American Enterprise Institute is home to probably the most hawkish and unilateralist elements of the constituency that supports this very aggressive, some say imperialist, kind of thrust into the world. And they've also kind of led the chorus on attacking Iraq virtually from the moment that the Twin Towers collapsed. They were pointing the finger at Iraq, and even a few days later published an open letter to the president saying he should include Iraq in his war on terror, even if no particular evidence or concrete evidence is adduced to tie Saddam Hussein to the September 11th attack. They've had their sights on Saddam Hussein and Iraq for a very, very long time. In addition, they have a number of people who work there, the most prominent of whom is Richard Perle, who is also doubles as the chairman of Defense Secretary Rumsfeld's Defense Policy Board, who are very, very close to Likud Party people in Israel. Indeed, Perle and a number of other people who are closely associated with him, one or two of whom were also working at AEI at the time, prepared a very significant paper back in 1996 for incoming Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that's gained some notoriety. It essentially advises Netanyahu on how he can more or less tear up Oslo and reshape the entire Mideast.
That paper is entitled A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm.
The 96 paper is a more of a kind of traditional balance of power analysis, which says it's not to make the Arab world democratic or really anything like that. It talks more about Iraq as being kind of the key link in creating a Middle East where the balance of power begins to favor states that are either in a de facto or even in a tighter alliance with Israel. And part of the an important thrust of the 96 paper was that there kind of is a pre-existing axis consisting of Israel, Turkey, and the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. The notion is that if you can liberate Iraq, possibly even installing a Hashemite figure on the throne in Iraq or in the leadership in Iraq, you really have a very strong alliance that can effectively intimidate, call it more radical forces in the region, whether you mean Syria or Iran, or for that matter, Saudi Arabia.
This sounds something like the domino theory in reverse.
Some have called it the Skittles theory, but yeah, this notion of Iraq being kind of the key domino has been raised in the last year in terms of democratizing the region as opposed to transforming the balance of power in the region, although kind of if you democratize it, the assumption is you'll transform the balance of power as well. But yeah, there is a kind of domino-like quality to it. But indeed, if you look back at this letter, this open letter to the president that I mentioned that was actually sent by an organization called Project for the New American Century, which is in AEI's building. I mean, it's essentially a kind of annex of AEI, although it has an independent legal authority, and its director is William Crystal, who's editor of the Weekly Standard, a Murdoch paper. If you look at that letter, they actually set forth a kind of agenda for the war on terror. That's just 9 days after September 11th, beginning with attacking bin Laden and the Taliban, moving over to Iraq, meanwhile cutting all ties to the Palestinian Authority, and then once you've done all of that, you can possibly attack Hezbollah in Lebanon, and you can intimidate Iran and Syria, which have supported Hezbollah, by telling them, if you don't immediately cease that support, we're going to come get you. And so they already, there was already a kind of agenda, and the agenda is probably a third through, but in another few weeks it might be more than half through. I don't know, but it's a fairly compelling letter, I guess.
This is a special edition of KVMR's Morning News. I'm Mike Thornton. We're talking with Jim Loeb, a journalist with Interpress and also a political analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus. This agenda is being driven by the philosophy of the so-called neoconservatives, like Richard Perle at the American Enterprise Institute.
Perle is probably the most, or certainly one of the two or three most prominent. And just to go back to AEI for a while, I mean, he's not the only one. There are a number of people who work with him who have been extremely prolific in kind of beating the war drums for the last year and a half. And they include people like Mark Royal Gerecht, who used to be a CIA officer, Mike Ledeen, who's been around for a very long time and was one of the big propagators of the KGB being behind the attempted assassination of the Pope back in the 80s. There's another fellow named Tom Donnelly, who used to be with Lockheed, and before that was with Project for the New American Century. Jean Kirkpatrick is associated with them, although she has really taken a much lower profile in recent years. Frank Gaffney is someone else who's not at AEI, but at Center for Security Policy. But all of these people have known each other for decades. They all work together very closely. They all have a very similar agenda and a similar ideology, and they have excellent access to the media. I mean, wonderful access to the media. They all use the same publicist who gets them placed in the major newspapers, who gets them on the talk show TV all the time. And they really have a genius for polemics, for developing arguments that they think will be persuasive to an American public, and then getting in places where they're able to get them to the public. They've really dominated the debate in a way that is far, far beyond their actual numbers. I mean, we're really talking about a very small group of people who are able to amplify their voices phenomenally.
Are these people like Perle manipulating the current situation and the so-called war on terrorism?
It's politics as usual, and kind of the word manipulation suggests a kind of conspiracy orientation, and I think what's important to underline is that all of these people involved in this, AEI, have huge paper trails. They have made no secret about their opinions and their beliefs for many, many years. So there's nothing like, you know, a smoke-filled room and how can we get him on Fox television? How do we make this point? And, you know, kind of behind people's backs, in a sense. This is just an example of an extremely effective and very small group of like-minded people who know the system and who know it very well, who are bureaucratically very savvy. Perle has used his chairmanship of the Defense Policy Board, which is a kind of governmental position but isn't really a governmental position, to enormous effect. I mean, they have excellent contacts. They have wonderful networks, which they've cultivated over decades, and they can, in a sense, get the job done. Perle's ability to do this goes back to the mid-70s when he and Rumsfeld teamed up and created something called Team B to discredit what they thought to be an optimistic CIA analysis about Soviet intentions in nuclear strategy. And the result was the last few nails were put into the coffin of detente. I mean, it's just brilliant Washington operators.
When I say manipulation, I guess what I'm saying is that I'm not sure that the American public would sign on to this program if they knew about the genesis of it and the intellectual authors. I mean, we hear hours and hours and hours of analysis of the situation with Iraq and the so-called war on terrorism, but we don't hear much about the American Enterprise Institute and how they are pushing forward this Middle East policy.
Frankly, I think, you know, even just to focus on the Middle East or to focus on Iraq in a way is insufficient because these people have much larger ambitions, and which has begun to be, you know, commented on in the mainstream press a little here and a little there, which is to fulfill, you know, something that Paul Wolfowitz and Cheney's chief national security aide first kind of put together in draft form back in 1992, and that's a model of a unipolar world and really quite an explicitly imperial kind of system that rests ultimately on American military power. I personally find this idea not very appealing. I also think that it's hopelessly naive. And I think a lot of what these people, their ability to, in a sense, game the system in Washington does not mean, I believe, that they have a tremendous grasp on the situation. And one of the things that's been so remarkable about the debate here in Washington is the extent to which the serious experts inside the U.S. government, and for that matter outside the U.S. government, on the region, believe virtually to a man or woman that this whole notion of dominoes is a fantasy. In fact, Anthony Cordesman, who's one of the talking heads that frequently appears on CNN talking about issues of Mideast politics and strategy, once described the idea of a domino theory in the Middle East as it crosses the border between neocon and neo-crazy. And he speaks for a lot of experts when he says this. The amazing thing is the degree to which the media seems manipulatable and the degree to which more rational sectors, former CIA experts and analysts on the region, former State Department experts and analysts, academics who know a lot about the region and who are in various Middle East studies centers across the country, the degree to which they have not been able to participate in the public debate to the extent that one might think that was appropriate. Again, for any one of these that appears, usually a neoconservative of the Pearl variety or the Gaffney variety will appear two or three times. And that's what I think is a serious problem with the media. Plus, the media is always looking, again, for the conflictual, or in a sense, the most extreme positions in any particular debate. And some people are just too rational and hence somewhat boring. But I think that's a kind of secondary consideration.
This is a special edition of KVMR's Morning News Program. I'm Mike Thornton. We're talking with Jim Loeb, who's a journalist with Interpress and a political analyst for Foreign Policy and Focus. Realizing that no one has a crystal ball here, what do you think is going to be the likely outcome of all of this?
War always makes things extremely difficult to predict. I mean, I personally accept their view that in many parts of Iraq, American troops will be greeted with great enthusiasm and that there will be dancing in the streets because I think Saddam Hussein is a pig, to put it mildly. I think the country's had a horrible time under his leadership, virtually since he consolidated his power in 1979 and had an awful lot of people, particularly on the left, shot. However, I think the post-invasion scenario is extremely questionable and problematic. And I wrote an article a few weeks ago for Interpress Service, which is my normal work, recalling what happened in Lebanon when Israel invaded in 1982. At that time, the Israelis were also greeted with songs and dance by the Shia population in the south, who were extremely happy to be rid of the PLO in the area, who were pretty much making their lives miserable. But yet, within just a matter of 8 months, the same Shia population were taking shots at American Marines and eventually blew up quite a few of them, as well as our U.S. Embassy. Iraq is a lot more, in its own way, more complicated than Lebanon. It's much bigger than Lebanon. I think actually hatreds may even be more intense in Iraq than they are in Lebanon. And you'll remember that the U.S. kind of retreated with its tail between its legs after about a year. Now, they didn't have the same mandate. That is, peacekeeping troops then didn't have the rules of engagement to use force until quite late in the period that they were there, and certainly not overwhelming force. But I don't think that changes the equation. Iraq's borders are extremely difficult to control. There's going to be a lot of tension in the area so long as Americans are there, or any Westerners are there. I'm certain that the invasion will feed Islamist extremism in the area and heighten Arab resentment generally. It's not going to work out well, but I don't know how much of a price we and other people who live there are going to have to pay before we realize that this could indeed be another Lebanon. And when that happens, I think the consequences will be very great. But it's going to be a very, very important event, and in many, many ways you can kind of feel or hear a hinge of history squeaking as we move toward this invasion mode. Iraq is not so much the issue as the larger global world order conception that lies behind this, which is essentially a unipolar world dominated by U.S. military, or guaranteed in a sense by U.S. military power, which is a extremely radical change from the basic assumptions of U.S. foreign policy since World War II, and whose consequences are just enormous.
This has been a special edition of KVMR's Morning News. Our guest has been Jim Loeb, a journalist with Interpress and a political analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus. We've been discussing the political philosophy and intellectual authors of the Bush administration's military and foreign policy, including Richard Perle and the American Enterprise Institute. That's it for the news program this morning. The Morning News is produced by KVMR's news staff and volunteers. My name is Mike Thornton. Now it's time to return to the Monday morning show.